Happy Friday, everybody.
Good morning.
This is November 20th, 2020, and we're on episode 124 of Transmission.
A lot of 20s in there.
Yeah. So. I wish I had a lot of 20s in my pocket.
But I wish I was in my 20s again.
Really? Do you want to go back and relive all that? Your best days are forward, with... man.
Yeah, that's the delusion that old people tell themselves. Yeah. Now, what I want is I want to go back to my 20s with the intelligence that I have now.
And
that's the best of both worlds.
And future knowledge, because I'm willing to invest to make myself rich so I can use the money for the revolution.
There you go.
I could out Bezos and then turn and use it to fund like the communist revolution around the world.
Well, but can you?
I don't know.
Can you use capitalism to unseat capitalism?
If I could time travel back into myself when I was in my 20s with all the things I know now, I'd give it a shot.
Yeah.
And if I failed, I'd just go back again and do it over, fix it.
I think you'd do a bigger photo shoot with that cowboy hat and the belt buckle.
And wear even tighter pants.
There you go.
Well, before we get even further astray, I'm Mark Van Stenwyck. I'm the director for the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And today is everybody's favorite day,
Fascism Friday.
I feel like there needs to be some kind of food that goes along with Fascism Friday, like French fries, maybe, or something.
That reminds me, remember after 9/11 how freedom fries became a real big thing?
Yeah.
I think Trump...
Fascism fries.
Yeah, fascism fries. I think Trump could really make a lot and sell them with his steaks.
There we go.
And people would be like, fascism tastes pretty good.
Yeah. You know, so... Yeah, I realized that I should have gone for some cheap hair dye today, so it could have been like dripping down our faces while we did this.
I tend to shy away from criticisms based on appearance, but when you're a major public figure doing press conferences for someone who's still the most powerful person in the world, and you have hair dye dripping down the side of your face while you're in crazed look, it's not... I think you can do better. I think Giuliani is maybe losing a little bit of his grip.
Oh, I think he lost his grip a long time ago. So,
we're starting with a question.
Oh, we've got a question.
Who's my favorite leader, past or present? Does Jesus count? I'm assuming you mean like mainstream political leader.
Not necessarily. Don't assume.
One of my favorite like radical figures is Peter Kropotkin. The Russian anarchist. He never really had any position of authority or power.
I was going to say, what level of leadership qualifies as...
If we're going for someone with a position of power, I'd have to think about it. Yeah. Subcomandante Marcos from the Zapatistas. He kind of counts.
Yeah. Michael Manley in Jamaica, he was a pretty good guy.
You
know, I was actually thinking about this just this morning. I was lying in bed, my usual pre-rising haze. Mm-hmm. You know, I was just thinking about this issue of, the evil people flourishing and the wise perishing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking about like our group of folks here in Transmission that comment and have all these reflections, the guests that we've had. And it's mm-hmm. like, you know, we've got a pretty good group.
Yeah.
And like, if this group had any, you know, oomph and leadership in the world, things would be a lot better. But it is interesting to me how, you know, often wise, good people are not in those positions. I was thinking, you know, like there's many, many dogs that are more famous on Instagram than any of us or than all of us put together.
I know.
I mean,
that's pretty rough.
It's pretty rough. Like if, you know, you're not as well known as a dog. Now, on a good side, we did get another donation. So I'm very appreciative of that. And I wish I could say we were well on our way to the multi-million dollar figure. I don't know if I wish I could say that, but that's what you're supposed to say. But
I feel awkward if we got that much.
Yeah, feels awkward, but I'm sure we'd work with it. Anyway, so 2020, lots of 20s. And yeah, we continue on our way. You know, this is the gruff. Yeah, see, Gus is trying to get famous on Instagram as a dog.
I feel like, I mean, I don't want to, I mean, Gus is a fine human name, but Gus is also a good dog name. So I think you could use it either way.
Yeah. So anyway, we're, you know, with this idea that America is now turned into a reality TV show, we're on episode number whatever of will we make it to the inauguration with the new president who got elected? And, you know, it really, and again, I think, you know, this just shows how much damage has happened over the last 4 years that we've even normalized the idea that a president would try to steal the election and his party would be basically kind of going along with that. And that we would be having to have conversations about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that, yeah, that would be, oh yes, gee, what is Trump doing to overthrow the election? I mean, you know, 5 years ago, 6 years ago, you said, 8, 10 years ago, you said we'd be having conversations about that. I mean, everybody would have said you were nuts. But this formational phenomenon that happens, right? Where we think we're these good, independent, free-thinking human beings, but we're just being formed and by our environment all the time in whatever various direction that environment is going. And, you know, garbage in, garbage out. Like that's what's happening. And so now, right, we have Rudy Giuliani getting on TV screaming like a psychotic lunatic, and everybody's like going, well, let's analyze this press conference. Like, we shouldn't be analyzing the press conference. We should be hauling the guy off to Bellevue Psychiatric Unit. I mean, that's what should be happening. But people, you know, serious news people are like going, yeah, so, gee, he seems kind of off the rails. Like, what's with that hair dye?
I mean, this is one of the things I've been thinking about. I remember with Bush Jr.'s second term, there was increasing anxiety and fear that he was going to declare martial law and extend his presidency, which I didn't think was going to happen at all. Because if you're in within a neoliberal worldview, if you live within the Overton window and you're looking around and you think Bush Jr. was over here and you're over here, you think, oh, these people are unhinged. He's going to pull it over here, not realizing there's this whole world outside the window and that Trump is on the outside of that window further to the right.
Right.
And so now we're talking about it, and there's a little mix of like, we don't want to overstate how predetermined like his ascension to Hitlerian power is. But on the other hand, there's a little bit of a boy who cries wolf phenomenon that I've seen with conservatives, like, you libs always say that, which is kind of true. People have been saying this for a while. But this is different. Like, I think we lose the ability to understand the difference because it seems vaguely similar. Like, this is vaguely similar to the idea that Bush might declare martial law, or vaguely similar to that whole fiasco with hanging chads. But it's only vaguely similar. It's not actually similar. Because what he's actually doing is trying to subvert, he's trying to call into question legally established protocols, and then pull his party into backing him up out of some sort of weird loyalty test for fear that they will lose votes if they don't fall in line. So this is a shifting in the dominant paradigm of the Republican Party that's being pushed to a test. And that's a dangerous situation to be in.
Well, or, I mean, what I would say is that it actually is similar, but it's the evolution, right? Sure. And that to me is this phenomenon of being pulled along by this karmic stream, right? So, you know, if you think about, I mean, I remember, right, during the Vietnam War, and there's the protests against the war, and you have the conservatives being like, America, love it or leave it, right? I mean, that's when that phrase got invented, or at least became very popular for the first time. And so at that point, when that statement came to be popular, there was this sense of like, oh, you know, the militaristic folks in the United States are just going to take over. There's going to be kind of this fascist takeover, right? So, I mean, that was language then, and it seemed less likely than it does. I mean, looking back, right, it seems like, yeah, no, that would not have happened. But at the time, right, when you start hearing people say, well, America, love it or leave it, people were like, oh, well, that means that these folks are just going to take over and it's not okay to have any opposition. And if you trace the path from then to now, it really is that same phenomenon, right? It's just sort of building steam. And I really do have to feel that the bottom line is, you know, if you think about, you know, these five or six people, right? You know, Trump, McConnell, Graham, Giuliani, Barr, right? What's the same about all, you know, it's like these pictures, like what's the same and what's different, right? I mean, it's a bunch of old white guys trying desperately to cling to power. And, you know, if you look at some of these pictures, like there was a picture of all these panicked voters in Georgia yesterday, the Senate campaign rally, 100% white, right? 100% white at this Republican rally. You know, this is whiteness trying desperately to cling to power and a vision of America and what America has been. And yeah, I mean, power, you know, it's this old thing, right? Power does not just give up. And that's what we see. It's, you know, Trump won't give up. You know, and all these people will not give up.
Some comments coming in. Kathleen writes, I watched the movie about the trial, Chicago 7, on Netflix yesterday. I'm old enough to miss the days when I thought I was making a difference.
Right.
I mean,
idealism of youth.
Yeah, and that's always the hard thing. I remember doing an interview back in the day when I was doing the Iconocast, an old podcast, and I was talking to John Deere, and we were talking about Daniel Berrigan, someone who I tried to interview, but he was already to the point where he was waiting for death by the time we were. And so I asked, like, you know, what does Dan think about the fact he spent all those years resisting the war and pushing, you know, as kind of like one of the preeminent Catholic radicals? And John said he's disappointed bitterly, but then he keeps saying that now at the end of his life, all there is the bread and the cup, which is a very Catholic thing to say, encouraging and sad at the same time. And so it just underscores for me, I remember that a lot, because we have no idea what our actions are going to do. And it's foolish to assume we're changing the world at a seismic level. I think it's fair to say that every action done with love changes the world on a small level. And that's really all we get. And we hope against hope that it'll change the system. But in times like this, it's really easy to give into a sense of deep discouragement and despair, because it seems like things are moving exactly the wrong direction. right. when we breathe a sigh of relief that Biden's president, we're not in a good spot.
Yeah. And, you know, to me, what that phrase from comment from Berrigan says, you know, is it really harkens back to the one of the most basic teachings about the spiritual life, which is to engage with humility, right? Mm-hmm. To recognize that we are dust. There's not much to us. And so, yeah, to expect any degree of power, influence in the big scheme is, you know, sort of foolish. But if we approach it from humility and we just recognize that, yeah, our loving actions are actually extremely important, right? And you definitely could do a lot worse. Right? You could be raving with hair dye dripping down all over you.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. And that's good. All right.
People should know this already, but if anybody's watching for the first time, this is where I need to insert the caveat. What we just were talking about isn't the same as the sort of neoliberal, we need to love everybody and always be polite to the oppressor too, because they're having a rough go of it. Like, that's not, to me, that sort of love should still take us to the streets. It should cause us to still struggle for justice, and it should cause us to prioritize the lives of the oppressed above and beyond everybody else's, because that's what the love should look like. Not, you know, Trump needs a hug. He does, but he should do it from within a prison cell, or at least in some sort of like one bedroom apartment where he's been stripped of his power and wealth. Then he can get a hug. CK writes, is there anyone who can stop Trump from totally bleep fucking everything up before Biden is sworn in?
Well, that's kind of the question, right? I mean, one of the things to me, I think that this situation has very clearly crystallized, if we didn't know it already, is that, you know, we rely on and assume the integrity of people who are in office and who have certain roles in society to do what is right. Because, you know, this whole idea that there's accountability, well, at some point, there isn't a higher level of accountability or authority, right? And so, like, you know, this horrible woman who is the head of the GSA, who's not signing this letter for the transition. And, you know, if you've seen news reports about her, they're trying to make her out, oh, she's a very nice person. She's very moral. It's like, no, she's not. You know, she is complicit in this evil. It's very obvious that Biden has won the election. She should sign this letter, right? So we're relying on her to do her job, which she's not doing. You know, these election board people in Michigan, we're relying on them to be honest and to certify the votes. You know, these legislators that Trump is trying to get to the White House to bully them into electing a different slate of electors to the Electoral College. We're relying on them to do their job and to be honest. So there's actually lots of people that can stop Trump, but they have to have integrity and they have to do their job. And if they don't, then yeah, I mean, William Barr is not going to enforce the law and get rid of Trump. I mean, he's part of the problem. And so, right. Who, you know, where does the buck stop? Do we have to rely on the Joint Chiefs of Staff? Are we going to have to rely on the head of the Secret Service to arrest Trump and throw him out of the White House when he won't leave? You know? We are.
that's ultimately what it comes down to, is I would imagine that first it goes to the Secret Service, because they have to protect the president. And so if they decide that Trump is still the president, then Biden has to go to another force. And so it has to be federal. So it'd probably be the FBI or the military. He's not going to call the Washington, D.C. Police Department.
Right.
No. So then there could be a struggle for power. If the Secret Service is deciding to, personally, I don't think this is why Trump is hedging by reinstalling people in position of these sorts of enforcement rules, like within the military with his loyalists.
Mm-hmm.
It's disturbing. And so when I hear people say, especially from, I've seen people from outside the country, some people from Australia in particular, I've been noticing, like, Trump's been doing everything that's within his legal purview. I'm like, well, it's because not everything is etched in law. And this is why it goes to the courts, because some of these things are etiquette. They haven't been ensconced within the law. And we're in the situation where instead of people certifying the votes and then him contesting it in the courts, he's trying to like use the threat of courts to keep his loyalists from even certifying the vote. So he's trying to delay something. And it's all very problematic. Personally, I don't think his chances of holding on to power past January are very strong, but it's a real enough risk for me to be worried.
Oh, we should be worried. I think we should be very concerned. All right, Gus.
Gus writes, to be fair, we know you to always be fair-minded, Gus. Yes. I don't know why I said that like that. It's actually true. He's been stress testing, not just policies, but the norms that undergird them since his first weeks. That's totally true. Since before his first weeks. I mean, even before he was president, he was pushing these things. Remember when he called into question the legitimacy of courts? It's really a house of cards. No, he's always been questioning the courts, except for when they serve him.
Absolutely. Yep.
Good. Gus. Adam writes, we have been talking about a slide to fascism for a long time. Yeah. And it's not that it's so unrealistic that it's happened the way we thought. It's that the slide is much more gradual, mundane, and normalized. You're right. We're like lobsters in a pot right now. Think about how relieved.
It's the banality of evil, right?
For sure.
Yeah.
Think about how relieved people will be if and when Biden and Harris take office. To me, those are solid Republican candidates. That's how far the right we've gone. You're right. And I feel like this is part of it. This is part of the built-in factor.
Mm-hmm.
Like at a certain level, I think wealthy and powerful figures who are involved in politics, even on the Democrat side, are playing a dangerous game. I think they enabled Trump to make it easier for themselves. I mean, this is the thing leftists always say, like, that there's this effect, this chilling effect of radicalism that happens. Like, if you see things moving towards socialism, what you have to do is empower someone further right so that you can step in and save them from the middle. Like, this is a tactic that's been gone a long time. I don't even care if it's intentional or not. It's the downside of the FDR move. I think FDR is one of the best US presidents in a lot of ways in terms of the outcomes. But we still have to recognize that that was a concession in order to keep the wealthy people happy. That was a band-aid for capitalism. That wasn't an embracing of socialism. Those are different things. So you're right. And this has been going on for a long time.
Yeah.
I can't tell what that emoji is. Is that
that's
a high
wave?
Five?
Yeah,
there's
like waving.
There's a little things coming off of the hand. Is it?
I guess I think he's waving. That's the ripple of the air.
I'm old and I can't see emojis out of that small.
I know.
I'm confused. Why is there hair dye dripping down my face? Sorry for being ageist. Is there a way for us to accept the death of the empire and use that acceptance of that to fuel our passion for revolutionary work from its own benefit, not just because there will be a heroic outcome?
Yeah. Yeah. I think absolutely. And I think, and, you know, this is another thing I've been thinking about a lot these last few days, right? I mean, so, you know, well, honest, to have honest self-reflection for our little podcast here. I mean, here we are, a couple of old white guys, you know, complaining that the U.S. is sliding into fascism. Yes, Mark, you're getting old. I see that hair dye.
There's no hair dye. This is all. I'm only 44, Dan.
Hey,
I'm barely middle-aged.
You're almost halfway to 90. So there you go. threw a little math at you there. But so, you know, kind of complaining that the U.S. is sliding into fascism. I mean, if you're a native person, the U.S. slid into fascism, you know, about 400 years ago. So, you know, I do think that, we need to not just accept the death of empire, but also I think accept the recognition that, yeah, this is not that new, right? This is not that new. The targets may be new. The mode of operation may be new. The particular way that this is being gone about may be new. But, you know, this is the U.S. standard operating procedure. If those in power aren't getting what they want, they just destroy you. And, you know, that's the way they get what they want. And so, yeah, I think we need to use that recognition and the acceptance of that to fuel our passion for revolutionary work. Absolutely.
I think it's just to add a little seasoning to what Dan said, from a different, another angle. Like, this is one of the reasons why we really need to understand that progress is a myth. The myth of progress. Like, I'm not talking about technological progress. Of course, innovation. Is there a myth of progress book?
Yeah.
I think so. But yeah, this idea that somehow how it works is we always get better as a society. And unless some aberrant people who are like nuts, like inject themselves and ruin what's going, as though somehow the authentic heart of America is this progress towards greater and greater, and that Trump is an aberration, rather than understanding that Trump is the norm, and that when we have things that look like progress, it is because of an intense struggle from people who are oppressed to fight for it. And that is important to understand, because this isn't like America at its heart is about freedom and liberty, and these people are un-American. No, America is rotten to the core. And when we have good things, it comes from the people who have been crushed by empire, giving a gift of life. And we need to understand that, because this is, otherwise we're going to keep falling into this hole over and over again until we die, which is where we're headed. So to me, the end of empire is good news, a painful one, but a good news.
So you realize that now that you've said that, the Obamas are going to disavow you.
Yeah. That's the other thing I've been seeing. Like, people still like, Obama, he has to say that about Jeremiah Wright. Like,
yeah, it's disgusting.
He gamed us all. Like, he's always never been on the page of Jeremiah Wright. Let's just be honest.
No.
Gus writes, Vox did a nice video about Poland and Hungary have basically broke many of the checks and balances in the EU system. Same thing. They're held together so tenuously.
Yeah.
This is going on. This shift is happening all
over. Yeah, well, on Turkey, you know, Turkey is really the big example of that, right? I mean, they're basically a fascist state at this point, but, you know, they're kind of hanging in there with Europe. And there's been no real accountability for that at all.
Joseph writes, all this to stop the U.S. from looking more like Canada.
Yeah, I know.
Which is a low bar. Canada isn't some sort of glimmering utopia, but it sure is a lot better than what we have here, for at least for most people. But it depends on who you ask. I mean, they do all sorts of atrocious things.
Hey, but they look, they have health care. And you know, we did let Tim Hortons in. So that was a victory.
That was a mistake. I started getting used to that one because of mismanagement.
I know, right?
I'm like, can't get my Tim Hortons inferior coffee and kind of gross donuts that people somehow gush about. I don't like Tim Hortons. It's just like poor. It's like a bad Dunkin' Donuts, which is already bad enough. Sorry, Canada.
Dunkin' Donuts coffee is strangely good. It's the heroin they add.
Just an anecdote. Speaking of empire, I remember when I was 19, I went to Canada. I was dating someone up there. We were driving around, and I saw, you know, Perkins restaurants have a giant American flag. But in Canada, they had a big Canadian flag. And I remember getting really upset, like, they are disloyal to America. That's how conservative I used to be. Adam writes,
Did you boycott Perkins after that?
It took me a few weeks before I had another chicken tender melt, that's for sure. Adam writes, it's yet another reminder that these people and this system do not represent us. I don't know anyone that could refuse to do their job and still hold any position or have a say in anything. Yeah, you have to be rich and powerful.
You have to be rich and powerful to do that.
The Overton window.
Yeah.
Yeah. Such a sad reality. This shifting rightward of this Overton window. Adam writes, we've seen so many tests of how far they can go and what the people will accept.
Yeah.
FDR betrayed his class. A lot of ways. I mean, man, can you imagine, like, if we could get an 81% marginal tax rate again? That'd be nice. I mean, that's really what fueled the post-war economy. And I don't understand how conservatives can deny this. And the slow erosion of that, like, that's a big piece of it. All these gains, you know, people fought for that. FDR did that because workers' movements were so powerful. After FDR, workers' movements started losing power purposefully so it wouldn't happen again. You have the civil rights movement, fought for stuff. And then those things are being rolled back purposely again. So this is the myth of progress. People fought and died for that stuff. And this is where we're at. We have to be willing to fight and die for this stuff, even though we have no promise that we're actually going to affect change. That's not a guarantee. It's a really difficult place, but that's always been the place of activists, martyrs, and revolutionaries. Norman writes, must be the same secret meeting Mitch McConnell had, the same dye on his face a couple of weeks ago, like Giuliani. Really?
Oh, really? I didn't see that. Mitch McConnell like turned blue and was dissolving a couple of weeks ago. So that was interesting. You know, I mean, what's very, you know, this is the truth is stranger than fiction, right? I mean, these people are starting to look like demon possessed people in fantasy movies, right? They're like turning colors. They're dissolving. It's really creepy.
There's definitely a fervor that is a little unhinged. The idea of them using hair dye and like having leaking just makes me think that they're aliens and that's not just hair dye. It's just like they have to color everything.
Yeah, right. It's
and if you put enough goop on them, their faces will melt off and you'll see some sort of like translucent scales underneath. Adam writes, the problem seems to be that the empire is dying and its central nervous system seems to understand that, at least on some level, and is fighting with its last gasps. The trouble is how dangerous it is in this moment and how ubiquitous this beast is on so many levels. Then, of course, how so many refuse to acknowledge or lack the tools to see the reality of our situation. Yeah. Empire falling.
I think it's more the second, much more than the first. I mean, and again, this is this formational problem and the power of systems is that, people are robbed of their faculty of discernment or they're just not trained in it. And so, they just get absorbed into the madness.
It's too bad we don't have training programs on discernment, spiritual discernment in particular, that apply to socio-political realities.
You know, I think we're going to have a program about that.
We'll get through it. We're past time. This happens to us all the time now.
I know it does.
Good point. Adam thinks Tim Hortons is an anti-Canadian propaganda. I think that is the truest thing that you've ever said, Adam.
That's an exaggeration.
I know, that is. In my eye. CK writes, I think capitalism is fascism. That's right. And we fought world wars to show what fascism looks like. So when the capitalist utopia fell upon the world, the masses were unaware. Yeah, that's the old adage that capitalism is fascism is capitalism plus murder. I think Orwell said that. But really, capitalism relies upon murder. Fascism is capitalism when it has to fight back.
Under stress.
It's Giuliani. It's capitalism with hair dye dripping down the side of its face.
Yeah.
Ceres writes, we need ethical clarity and compassionate nuance, not enabling abusers and their cult followers.
Yeah, and ethical clarity and compassionate nuance requires a horizontal communities of praxis, right? Yeah. And if you want to check out Siri's page, she's did a good follow up on this embodiment conference thing, and there was a great article there that talked about this. And this is the problem. I don't know if it's a problem. It's a problem in terms of getting the word out. you know, ethical clarity and compassionate nuance in horizontal communities of praxis is fundamentally anti-market and anti-capitalist. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't get big and famous. Right. And, you know, and this again is that paradox going all the way back to making a difference. You know, maybe making a difference is bowing out of the empire, right? And just engaging in communities of praxis that are really doing that hard work of undoing all of this systemic conditioning.
Adam writes, it's weird how good Dunkin' Donuts coffee is until you try it without sugar and cream. But damn if I don't have a soft spot for it after my time in Chicago.
Dunkin' Donuts is strangely good.
Yeah. The way you're talking about that is the way I feel about White Castle burgers. But I'm just gonna, just gonna go there.
No,
it's the anointing of evil die. Yes. The mock of the Luciferians. Catherine writes, learning about the changes in the tax rate since FDR, realizing that while lots of people still believe wealth will trickle down, others have been busy intentionally plugging all the leaks. Now the only thing that trickles down is hair dye. Thank you for bridging the gap between economics and Giuliani's hair dye into a perfect metaphor, Catherine.
Yeah. Well done. We all know how brilliant Catherine is, so it doesn't surprise me.
First rate.
If anybody could do that, she could.
Adam writes, all the talk from the right about alien lizard people makes me feel like they're projecting, like when it comes to all the rest of their claims. There's a lot of projection going on.
Yes,
I was just reading something.
A lot of projection going on.
Scott Peck, I saw today about how if you're a narcissist who's doing evil, you can't own the fact you're doing evil, so you project it on everyone. That's why Trump sees evil plots everywhere. Gus writes, FDR was able to make the New Deal happen, at least partly because he worked with white supremacist segregationist Democrats. Almost all the benefits of the New Deal went to blacks. None of the benefits of the New Deal went to blacks. You know, that's funny. You point that out. There's a certain group of class essentialist white people out there who are socialists who hate when people say this. And it's fascinating. I don't know what that's about, but clearly the benefits of the New Deal were disproportionate towards some people rather than other people. It's one of the big weak spots of that. That's controversial to say, is bizarre to me. And Sirius writes, there's a Dunkin' Donut place in SoCal, Burbank.
Hello. There you go.
That's the last word. Everyone go ahead. Dunkin' Donuts. Now that pumpkin spice season is pretty much gone. I'm going to stand you. Everyone will be happy to know. I think I'm going to shift my affection to Fala Lattes, which is the Caribou Coffee Eggnog Latte. That's where I'm going.
All right. Well, stay vigilant. Thanks for all the great comments. And we'll see you on Monday.
See you all on Monday. Thank you.